You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here with MLB.com Marlins reporter Joe Frisaro as we continue to break down the roster the Miami Marlins are putting together heading into 2017. And today is infield day. I guess we'll just go around the horn, Joe, and that starts at the hot corner. Martin Prado is back. It's in a situation where obviously late in the 2016 season, he signed that extension, a time when you don't necessarily normally see that kind of thing happen. But obviously this is a matchup where this team loves having him as part of it, and he's happy to be a part of the Marlins.
Yeah, Tim, this was, you know, when you look at all their offseason moves and you kind of are going to measure it from the Volquez signing, the Ziegler and Tozawa and all the pieces they added, this is probably their biggest offseason move, and people kind of forget that because he was, you know, one of their own. But the Marlins, you know, clearly prioritized all last year, Tim. There were talks going on before any of us really were even reporting about it, but you knew, you know, mid to late in the year, that retaining Martin Prado was their number one offseason priority. And when you know, look at it all, 3 years, $40 million, the richest contract of any free agent that they got. So retaining Prado is part of their offseason move, and a huge one. I mean, obviously the team was really struck with a terrible tragedy at the end with the passing of Jose Fernandez. And Prado really, you know, as if he wasn't already, you know, he really stepped up as kind of the spokesman for the team. I always call him kind of the unofficial captain of this team. Tom Mattingly, even the last game of the season, allowed when a lot of the bench guys played at Washington, he allowed Prado to actually manage the team that day. And, you know, he kind of went out and made a pitching change even in that game. Prado, highly, highly important to this team. And when you look at the numbers in 16, highly productive. Led all National League third baseman in hits. And batting average, .305 batting average, 183 hits, struck out the fewest number of times of all third basemen in National League, just 69 strikeouts. And he drove in 75 runs and hit eight homers, not a ton in terms of the power there at the corner. But Marlins Park is not, you know, the kindest to hitters of Prado's, the way Prado's approach is in terms of knocking the ball over the fence.
Also, I was actually surprised. I think of Martin Prado as being a guy who's been around the game forever at this point, Joe, but this will just be his year 33 season. I mean, he's no youngster, but I always think of him as being already mid-30s to pushing late 30s. He's still right there and has some baseball left in the tank.
Yeah, and that's why it's a three-year deal. And I do think this, though, Tim, you have to be careful with him, how you're using him. So he's going to be spelled from time to time, you know, to keep his production up. It's not ideal for him if he's running out there 155, 156 games or whatever, you know, because he'll break down. So I think part of Don Mattingly's approach with Prado to maintain his production is to kind of give him some days off and kind of coach him along and spot him along to keep him as fresh as possible, so he could hold up over a long year.
Moving over to shortstop, and Adany Echevarria really had that breakout season a few years ago, Joe, but a step back in 2016, the batting average way down at .236, the on-base percentage below .300. Now, he's never been a big on-base percentage guy, but that was kind of a low point as well. He makes some spectacular plays at shortstop, but do you expect a bounce-back year from Echevarria in 2017?
It would really help the team if it was. I mean, yeah, you know, you're kind of reading that flash line from 16, but in 15, he actually was pretty productive,
right,
with a .281 batting average, .315 on base, .374 slugging, and that's hitting in the eight hole. You know, so obviously nationally, the eight hole isn't ideal for big, big numbers, but you expect him to be better than .236, .283, .311. So, and, Tim, I think it affected his defense last year. I think he carried his offense to the field. Wasn't as good as the 2 years previous. He was a Gold Glove finalist, didn't win it. But, you know, to me, you're a finalist. You have every, you know, you're right there, obviously. So I think Echevarria, this is a big year for him. And, you know, from the terms of the Marlins looking to keep him, you know, even longer term after this. So, you know, he obviously a very athletic player. If he doesn't show a little bit more, this could be the end of the line for him as a Marlin. So I think there's going to be, you know, some incentive for a better year. And, you know, I didn't write it in my story. I don't have the numbers offhand, but he, you know, when in the advanced metrics, his hard contact was about the same in 16 as it was in 15. The Marlins did take that in consideration and said, look, you know, the 16 numbers maybe is a little bit unlucky as well, because he did hit the ball pretty hard. And we'll see if that translates, if he increases production at the plate.
And then when you move over to second base, D. Gordon, obviously 2016, hurt by the suspension. He was able to come back late in the season. But when you look at him going into this year, obviously there's going to be a lot of question marks, Joe, because people are going to wonder, hey, is the reason he was so productive in 2015 because of the PEDs, and what can we expect from him in 2017?
No question. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people looking at D, and I think if there's going to be a player on this team with a chip on his shoulder, you know, wanting to prove that, you know, obviously when he hit 330, that isn't something that happens all the time, but obviously at this high mark, and, you know, when he won the batting title, what, 333 2 years ago, and then, you know, he failed that test last spring training. And I really do, you know, looking back at him and kind of, he is a very energetic person and, you know, a guy that really loves to be at the park. But you can see mid-spring training on that there's something wasn't right. And then he got slapped with that suspension the end of April for the failed test in spring training. So, you know, I think he knew what was coming, and I think it affected him. So, you know, how he did that whole year in 79, keep in mind he played, what, 79 games, and he sat for 80. You know, in terms of that half a year suspension. So there's going to be a lot to prove. And as you note, you know, the eyes are going to be on him to see, you know, if he is more of the player a couple of years ago or not. If the Marlins could get a 300 season out of him batting average wise, I think the on base will be good enough. Clearly, if this team is going to take off and have any chance this year, a productive D. Gordon at the top of the order, being disruptive on the bases, making things happen in what I think would be a pretty good offensive lineup, even, you know, they finished, what, third to last or whatever, and run scored last year. But he is going to be one of the central players on this team, and to see if he, you know, can be the player he was when he was an all-star in 14 and 15. So it's going to be a big year for D. Gordon, and see how he bounces back and, you know, if he can remove some of the suspicion people might have if 15 was a little bit inflated and not natural.
Yeah, and Gordon, I mean, obviously they're going to need him at the top of the order, like you said, and disrupting things, stealing bases. What they need at first base, Joe, is power, I think. When you talk about Justin Bour, obviously he was having a breakout season a year ago when he got hurt and he missed all that time. So like Gordon, there's going to be questions, hey, who's the real D. Gordon? I think people want to know, was that the real Justin Bour that we got a flash of, a guy that can really swing the bat and that can hit home runs in Marlins Park before the injury? Can he be that guy? And then after that, I guess the question will be, can he do that every day, or is he going to end up being a platoon guy?
Yeah, no question. When you look at last year, when things started to go wrong for the Marlins, it was when Bour, you know, hurt his ankle in Atlanta in early July. At that point, he had 15 homers, 46 RBIs in 68 games. And he finished the year with, you know, I don't think he hit another home run the rest of the way, drove in a few more runs after he came back in mid-September. They're going to need Justin Bour. I mean, it's a very talented defensive infield, very athletic infield. At first base, Bour is, you know, not that Gold Glove caliber player as they have at the other positions, but they're going to need production, as you note, and power, because there's not any real power in that infield besides Justin Bour. So he's a guy who, when he was hitting that stride, as you saw by July before the injury, he's starting to pull the ball, elevate the ball, and easy power. I mean, second deck homers without big swings, and the guy will draw a lot of walks as well. Obviously, keeping him on the field, you know, one of the reasons they wanted him to slim down last year at this time was to, and, you know, hopefully in their mind, keep him more durable, keep him on that field. And, you know, the Marlins right now do not have that complement right-hand platoon option. He is not in camp right now, and he may not be. And Don Mattingly has said he wants to see if Justin Bour, who has never really hit left-handers that well, can play every day and face left-handers with the occasional day off. So big year for Justin Bour in terms of a guy that is going to have a lot of eyes on him as well to see if he is an everyday guy. And if he's one of those guys that could be, you know, highly productive in helping, you know, protect Stanton and everybody else in that middle of the order.
Then when you look at the bench as far as the infield goes, Derek Dietrich obviously did such a great job at second base last year when D. Gordon did have to serve the suspension. He's one guy. Then you have Miguel Rojas as well. How do those guys fit in as far as playing time and what positions do they get the most time at?
Yeah, they got two really good ones, I think. You know, very good depth in the infield in that regard. You know, if they go with a four-man bench especially, you know, you're going to be looking at these guys playing everywhere. You know, Derek Dietrich can back up at first base. Now he's a left-hander as well. But, you know, he's a guy that can play there if four needed a day off or two against a right-handed, you know, pitcher. And, you know, he could play some third as well and back up D at second base. And he plays a little left field as well. So Dietrich can drive the ball to the park, left-handed hitter who has a knack for getting on base. Defensively, he makes the plays that are right at him, and that's really what they're asking for. And Miguel Rojas is one of those interesting guys that, you know, he's that super utility guy as an infield. He's their best fielding first baseman. He's close to, you know, the numbers may not completely suggest it, but he is close to that type of guy at short, behind Echeverria. Now, keep in mind, he's also playing third, second, and first, so he's not just doing it every day, but a guy who has familiarity with Mattingly dating back to L.A., and then Mattingly really liked him and even started playing him over Echeverria at times when he was hitting a little bit better at stretches than Etch last year. So, to me, Rojas is your late-inning defensive replacement at first base. He's your, you know, kind of 1B shortstop, and he could play second and third at a pretty high rate as well, but may get less time there because Dietrich could fill in both of those spots as well.
So it's a good, if you're going to go with that extra reliever, you have to have the guys that make that possible to be able to play all over the diamond, and the Marlins have that, which would make that interesting, and that's certainly going to be a fun thing to watch, how they handle that bullpen and this roster as a whole, because going with one less fielder in the National League is also a little bit more complicated than doing it in the American League, where there's a few less substitutions to have to worry about as the season goes. Great stuff as always, Joe. This has been MLB.com Extra, our Marlins edition. For Joe Fusaro, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.